Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today, we're going to talk about what Republicans are trying to get in exchange for holding the debt ceiling hostage. And I interview former Republican consultant and writer at The Bulwark, Tim Miller, about the ever-growing list of George Santos lies, where a so-called moderate Republican like him fits into politics now, and what he expects to see from the impending Trump-DeSantis feud. I'm Brian Tyler Cohen, and you're listening to No Lie. So this past week, the U.S. officially hit its debt limit. In last week's episode, I warned about what's at stake if the U.S. defaults, which is basically the full faith and credit of the United States, domestic and global markets, the stability of the U.S. dollar. Even though we hit our limit, the Treasury Department is now using what it's calling extraordinary measures to meet its obligations for just a limited amount of time, which brings us to June of this year. If the debt ceiling isn't raised by then, we'll see our economy crater and the dollar's position as the world's reserve currency put at risk. So, fun stuff. So, the solution here, as I explained in the past, is a clean bill raising the debt ceiling. Republicans won't do that because they see this as their opportunity to hold the entire economy hostage in exchange for a few concessions. And in terms of those concessions, we don't know all of them yet because Kevin McCarthy won't reveal what he promised those hostage takers in exchange for their speaker votes, but we're slowly starting to learn what some of them are, and they are insane. We already know that they want to take an axe to popular programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that, you know, they don't want because those programs serve the working class and not the donor class. And so even though you've spent your entire lives paying for those earned benefits, Republicans want to privatize because, you know, no enterprise is valid unless there's a rich CEO behind it giving you the absolute bare minimum. But this week, we also found out that they're pushing for the elimination of the IRS, all personal and corporate income taxes, the inheritance tax, the payroll tax, and all of that would be replaced by a 30% national sales tax. It's called the Fair Tax Act, which is a gift to the wealthy. It's like Christmas and their birthday and the 4th of July wrapped into one. So instead of collecting income tax commensurate with your income, which, you know, for the wealthy is a lot, instead we slap a flat tax on every item sold in this country, which means every single time you buy a shirt, a meal, a roll of toilet paper, it'll cost 30% more. And so now it's not the wealthy being taxed based on their income, which is disproportionately higher than everyone else's. It's everyone else, the working class, that'll carry the brunt of the tax burden in this country. Like, think about it. It's not like someone making 10 million bucks a year is buying lunches that cost 1,000 times more than someone making $100,000 a year. So our tax revenues will plummet, which means less funding for programs that people rely on to survive, which means people pay out of their pockets and have less disposable income. That means less spending, which will contract our economy. And because we'll have less tax revenue, that means our deficit gets worse, which means it's harder to shrink our national debt, which is the thing that Republicans pretend to care about, even though all of their policies actually make it worse. Like, there is no planet on which the elimination of all income and corporate taxes being replaced by a flat sales tax does anything other than drive our deficit through the roof. Here's the wildest part. Consider the fact that we just finished an election cycle where the only thing that the GOP ran on was high cost and inflation. And now that they have power in the House, the way they want to exercise that power is to tax everything 30% higher. Every time you open your wallet, you're incurring a 30% premium. Super low income earners don't even incur an income tax, but now they get hit with paying more on everything. Again, the only people who win here are the ultra rich, and it is the working poor who would get slammed. All of this coming from the same people who are currently cosplaying as the voice of the working man and following the price of eggs going up like it's the stock market on Black Friday. The gap between what these people say and what they actually do is big enough to fly a plane through. So what do we do? What's the solution here? Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz summed it up pretty perfectly. He said, quote, "In exchange for not crashing the United States economy, you get nothing. You don't get a cookie. You don't get to be treated like you're the second coming of LBJ. You're just a person doing the bare minimum of not intentionally screwing over your constituents for insane reasons," which is exactly right. Like, you don't negotiate with hostage takers because then that tells them that hostage taking is an effective strategy. And these people already think that because it worked with Kevin McCarthy. He's going to put a bill on the floor seeking to eliminate the IRS. He's probably going to try and tie that bill to the debt ceiling. So the position here has to be making sure that Americans know that Republicans are trying to crater the U.S. economy. And in exchange for cratering the U.S. economy, they're also trying to take away your Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid and slap a 30% tax on every single item sold in America. If you can find what part of that sounds good to you, like, I'm all ears. So we'll continue to watch this fight play out, but hopefully it's resolved before the 11th hour in June when we're set to default. Hopefully the Democrats can make it clear that we're not going to sacrifice the entire economy so that a few terrorists can traffic in their fever dream of screwing over the working class. Because it's already clear that Kevin McCarthy and the rest of his party are perfectly willing to do that. Next up is my interview with Tim Miller.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Now I've got Tim Miller, Republican consultant to a number of campaigns, including Jeb Bush's campaign in 2016, and now he's a writer at The Bulwark. Tim, thanks for joining today.
Hey, Brian. Good to be with you, man.
Thanks. So let's start with the obvious here. What was your favorite Katara Ravash routine?
Oh, that is a good question. I mean, I did like her death drops
that's right.
On season 3
that's right,
of Drag Race. Yeah. Is that how you say it?
I don't know, and I was actually going to ask you. For those watching, by the way, Katara Ravash is George Santos's purported drag name from when he was, of course, a drag queen in Brazil, I don't know how many years ago. But I was trying to figure out what the pun is with Katara Ravash.
Yeah. A ravishing, maybe? I don't know. My Portuguese, all I got is obrigado, so I don't know any other Portuguese.
Yeah, yeah.
He's giving drag queens a bad name, though, you know, with he's a thief and a liar, and, you know, this is, drag queens deserve better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think in the drag community, this is probably the least of their problems lately. I was actually going to ask, like, do you think that this will be what does him in as far as Republicans are concerned? Because you can lie about your religion, you can lie about your job, you can lie about how many times your mother has died, but being a drag queen in the Republican Party today does seem like the cardinal sin.
That's not that great, but Carrie Lake used to be a drag king, and she got along with it. I think the question is, how willing are you to go along with MAGA? I mean, look, Republicans like, you know, somebody that will poke their eye in the libs that's one of them, right? Like, they love the idea of a gay Republican. There's no way to get him out besides shaming him or kicking him out, right? And he seems unshameable. And Kevin McCarthy is so desperate for every vote he can get, he's not going to get rid of him. And so I think that we're stuck with Santos, at least until there's legal issues, you know, which I think clearly we're going to run into legal issues, since somehow he came up with $700,000, you know, despite the fact that he was like stealing his mom's patient's checks to buy shoes.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not really a drag critic, but it didn't look like he was spending a lot of money on his costumes,
right,
either.
Yeah. No, the beatdown wasn't top tier. So do you think that the drip, drip, drip of George Santos's lies will eventually become an actual problem for Republicans? And I ask this because when you've got people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, like Lauren Boebert, like George Santos, who become the de facto faces of the Republican Party by virtue of them being the only ones in the news every day, do you think that will eventually kind of bear itself out when Republicans show up to vote for their candidates in the next election in 2024? And the only people that they've heard about for the last 2 years are this guy who's lying about his religion, his mom, his, you know, drag queen past, and on and on.
Yeah. a lot will depend on who the Republican nominee is, right? That will take out on a lot of what the 2024 vote is. But just as a general topic, the crazy ass Republicans are absolutely hurting other candidates. And you know, I think that some of the smart set in D.C. was like, oh, this is a Twitter phenomenon and actual real voters don't care about this. But it turned out in 2022, we learned that real voters do care. And, you know, I was on the road a lot. I did some with the circus with Showtime this year and for the Bulwark. And when you talk to kind of Bulwarky types who are like former Republicans who have switched, you know, they're like, I will hear just as a general comment from somebody that I'm talking to, like, these guys are a fucking shit show, you know, like, and you just list all the people. It's like every person that they come out, every person that I hear from, all the whole Trump posse, like they're all corrupt. They're all crazy. And I can't vote for my local Republicans if the party is such a shit show. Look, I'm from Colorado. This is a good example. Joe O'Dea ran. He's probably the most normal Senate Republican in Colorado of all the Republicans. And I asked my friends and you know, sources and stuff in Colorado, and a lot of people were just like, you know, Joe O'Dea seems like a fine guy, but the rest of the party's fucking nuts, and I don't have any trust that he can go to D.C. and zag, because no other Republicans have shown that they could, besides, like, Liz Cheney. So I do think that Santos is just, like, one more example of this, on top of Green, on top of all the others you named.
You know, Jon Stewart came out in a recent episode of his show and cautioned against confusing absurdity for lack of danger. And look, I don't think that George Santos is going to be the next Trump. You know, this guy is a doofy bowl of jello. But do you think that this is a cautionary tale against the kinds of people that, you know, run once deceit and shamelessness are no longer things that stop people from running?
Stewart hit it on the exactly on the head. This was the January 6th phenomenon. Look, as a never Trumper who was speaking out and very concerned leading up to January 6th, there were a lot of people who, you know, a lot of old gray beards who were like, ah, this guy's a clown. He's not really going to have a coup. And then all of a sudden the Capitol's getting stormed, right? It's like that caution, right? To say, oh, these guys are jokers, so they can't be scary. I mean, January 6th showed more clearly than anything that you can be a joker and be scary. I mean, like Rudy Giuliani with the dye dripping down his face. I mean, he didn't have the A-team working on that coup. I think that's like a, you know, something that is going to continue to be an issue. And if you look at the party, so let's put it this way. In 2016, when I first spoke out against Trump, I got a lot of calls from people who were like, business guys and, you know, normal centrist Republican types who are like, hey, I want your advice. Can I still run in 2018? Can I still be part of this party? I'm thinking about running for Congress. I'm not sure if I should. And I would tell them, I don't think you can win a primary without being crazy. And usually those people didn't run. And so who has run, right? So this is like a supply and demand question, right? Who does decide to run? People who either are crazy or are happy to pretend being crazy. And so I do think that if you look at the makeup of Congress now, in 2023, it's actually significantly crazier than the 2017 Republican Congress. You know, it wasn't like Trump just like flipped a switch. It's a gradual effort where quasi-normal people opt out and people willing to, you know, do what George Santos is doing opt in.
Yeah. You know, with that said, you were a longtime Republican consultant. There are a small faction of you out there, like, where do you fit into politics today? Because, you know, I hear a lot about these moderate Republicans, these Reagan Republicans, but that Republican Party doesn't actually exist in practice. We're in a moment where, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is a 9/11 truther, is sitting on the Homeland Security Committee. Like, that's what the Republican Party looks like today. So yeah. I guess, where do you fit into this?
Certainly don't fit in there. And I tried to fight within the party. We tried to recruit a primary against Trump in 2020 and didn't recruit any strong candidates. And after all the Stop the Steal stuff, I officially left the party in 2020 because it just felt hopeless. We still are pretty important, right? We're not us former Republican types, swing voters, moderate types. We might not be enough to control either of the parties, obviously, that have moved away from us. But if you just look at 2022, you know, this isn't kind of popular to say in progressive spaces, but like if you just look at the numbers, with exception of young voters, like the Democratic core Democratic groups didn't turn out as high as Republican groups. Young voters turned out higher than they tended to, so that helped Democrats in certain places. But Republican base turnout was higher than Democratic base turnout in 2022. The reason why Republicans did worse was because people that identified as you know, as maybe 8% of people that identified as Republicans nationwide, different in different districts, voted for the Democrat because they're like, this party is so crazy. crazy. That's why the Democrats won. Did better than expected and held the Senate. And so I think it's an important group that frankly the Joe Biden Democratic Party is talking to now more than the Republican Party is talking to. We'll see if the Republicans learn their lesson for 2022. I don't see any evidence that they have, but right now, like, the reality is we're just my people, like the Romney, Clinton, Biden people, like, we're just homeless and we're just going to be. And many of us are, for all practical purposes, Democrats until the Republicans get their shit together. And like you said, I don't see that on the horizon.
I've spoken to Mike Murphy about this, who is another Republican who came on to speak with me. But just kind of this idea of, would you kind of vote for Democrats? And Mike said no, but like, I think it's going to be different here. But would you vote for Democrats to hasten the demise of the Republican Party as it stands now until up from the ashes will emerge a different Republican Party?
God love Mike Murphy. You know, there's nothing false about hope. And he's a sweet guy and a smart strategist and won a lot of campaigns. But he's just hoping for a party that's going to come back that's not ever going to come back. Yeah. And so I think that's why he answered the question the way he did, because he thinks, in good faith, this isn't a criticism, in good faith, he thinks it's worth it to fight for the party, pick the handful of good Republicans that are still out there, your Mitts, your Adam Kinzinger's or whatever, and work with them. My view, I'm more aligned to your view, which is I think that the Republican Party isn't going to actually reform itself until it feels like it's not viable. Look at what happened to the Democratic Party in the 90s with Clinton, right? Like, why did the Democrats move to the middle in the 90s? Well, because they just got their ass beat three straight times, in overwhelming blowout fashion. And so they're like, we have to move to the middle. Now, maybe some of the progressive listeners didn't like that move, okay? But like, that's what it was. It was a practical move. If the Republicans are ever going to move back to a sanity, they're going to need to lose. And so I do think that, that for now, I think that I'm essentially in an uneasy coalition, mostly with Democrats, and might be different on a case by case basis.
Well, the irony of that is that Republicans had the opportunity to do that. I mean, they were repudiated at the ballot box. And so they should have taken that as an opportunity to retool and figure out like what didn't work and change those things moving forward. But by virtue of kind of like burying their heads in the sand and doing this political theater where they pretended that they didn't lose an election that they very clearly lost, it kind of took that opportunity away from them to retool and present themselves better to their own voters so that they could win the next time. And then the next time they lost again. And so they kind of, I mean, they did it to themselves, right?
None of them listen to me anymore. yeah. My old friends who stuck around at the party. But I was screaming this from the rooftops. Had they convicted him during the second impeachment, instead of Mitch McConnell going out there and giving the speech about how his principles, but then voting to acquit, had they convicted him, he would have been barred from running in 2024. Now, that would have pissed off some MAGA people. And so 2022 probably still wouldn't have been great for Republicans because on the other side, they would have lost MAGA voters, not voters in the middle.
But probably less than the amount of Republicans who defected to the Democrats.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you could have built for the future, right? So they had this opportunity right in front of their face. They just needed to get 17 Republicans. They got 7. They needed to scrounge 10 more to convict his ass, ban him from running, and say, this is not us. This is not our party. And maybe they could have built from that. That, I think, was the critical error. And now I feel like we're in a spot where we're many cycles away from being able to fix it.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
There was a recent vote at the end of the 117th Congress to protect pre-existing same-sex and interracial marriages. A handful of Republican senators voted for it, but about 75% of Republican senators didn't. This was, you know, just until a few years ago, your party. Did this have any effect on you? Like to see that? I mean, that is, for all intents and purposes, like an attack on. An attack on you and
you mean
and
as a gay
as a gay an attack on you and like the entire LGBT community. Yeah. I mean
the gay thing is so interesting, right? Because on the one hand, you know, the idea that I like to think back to like 18-year-old young Republican closeted Tim, you know, if you would have told him that like, oh man, 47 Republicans will vote for gay marriage in 15 years and like you'll be married and have a kid, yeah. I would have been like, well, that seems pretty good on balance, right? You know, okay. Yeah. But then fast forward, things have changed so fast and we've made so much great progress, you know, thanks obviously to Democrats and to activists on the left, that now you look at it and it's like a slap in the face,
yeah, right? It's just like right, not, yeah, like the like, crumbs that you're being given are not,
this
like
is
enough.
Not enough. And you see, to me, that vote, while disappointing, like the number of Republicans have voted for it, is less concerning. You know, now I come from a different place as a dad than the stuff that is in the schools, right? And you can see like the Republicans basically have ceded this fight on marriage and on the military and, you know, some of the big fights of, you know, my youth. And now we're saying, okay, well, we're going to like basically reskin the old 1970s and 80s, you know, gay scare, gay teacher scare, you know, for the 2020s. And I think the don't say gay stuff that DeSantis is pushing, like to me, that is, that's the stuff that I'm not gonna be able to abide. And right. And that is, I think is what makes, is one of the reasons, not all of the reasons, but one of the reasons that makes me different from like a Murphy and some of the others, not to pick on him. Right. You know, I hear from some Republicans who are like, well, DeSantis seems like a little better. And I'm like, I don't think, like, I can't get there for DeSantis. Yeah. Like, maybe you could sell me on a Chris Sununu, but you can't sell me on Ron fucking DeSantis and the don't say gay thing.
Oh, I want to get into exactly that point. And that is this idea that basically because Ron DeSantis isn't Donald Trump, that all of his other flaws can just be, you know, disregarded. But like, this is a guy who's not a moderate by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, I can promise you that as we see this fight, this primary fight, this impending primary fight move forward, we'll see Ron DeSantis like come at Trump from the right.
From the right.
And so like, I guess, what do you make of that as we, you know, head toward 2024.
He definitely will. And I think that he sees his lane against Trump as attacking him on vaccines, attacking him on the border. You didn't build the wall hard enough. You know, you weren't effective enough. And you know, you just generally didn't own the libs as well as you should have. Right. Like, I think that's where his hit is on him. And so, you know, I look at that. To me, there were a lot of reasons. Donald Trump was never even close. I never even contemplated the idea that I might support Donald Trump. You know, there were plenty of reasons. One of the reasons, though, to oppose Trump as an ever-Trumper was that just the downside risk of him. He's just such a fucking loose cannon and psychotic, right? You know, who the hell knows what he could do? Like, that's the only area where DeSantis is better than Trump for me, right? Like, you know, DeSantis is in some ways, it's kind of hard to close your eyes and imagine people waving DeSantis flags and horns and charging the Capitol, right? Like,
famous last words,
right? Yeah. But it's a little hard. That Trump always had that downside risk. But if you just look at him on a policy, you know, on a policy grid, DeSantis and Trump are going to be indistinguishable.
There's been a lot of anointing Ron DeSantis, the heir apparency, in the Republican Party, despite him showing pretty much no appetite to take a swing at Trump. Or I guess not only is he not taking a swing at Trump, but he gained all of his fame in the Republican Party by like basically being as subservient to Trump as he could possibly be. I mean, you remember that Build the Wall commercial with his kid. And what do you think happens when it comes time for him to make a decision here? Do you think that he ultimately does engage in this battle that will be scorched earth on Trump's end?
People should go back and watch that ad with his kid of building the Lego wall if they haven't seen it. It's actually crazier than it even sounds. So having campaigned against him in 16 with Jeb, unsuccessfully, if you don't remember, DeSantis seems to be wanting to try the Ted Cruz model, right? Which was, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, but on this one or two things, I'm a little more conservative than you, but I don't really want to criticize with you. Don't fight with me. Don't pick on me. Right. And that's kind of the path I think DeSantis wants to go. It didn't work for Cruz. Right. So I think there's a good reason to doubt that it could work for DeSantis. The one thing that he has going in his favor is that Trump is just has a lot more baggage than he did in 16. Right. Like you can't be the outsider again. You can't. His shtick is feeling a little tired. He's looking a little older. Right. And so the question is Trump going to be as good at doing the Trump of it all of 2016, and the nicknames like Ron DeSanctimonious seemed a little half-baked, right? Like, so it's possible that the Cruz strategy from 16 might not have been enough in 16, but might be enough in 24 because of Trump's weaknesses. But I think that there's also a lot of reason to think that it won't work, and that Trump will just lay the hammer down on him. And I don't think that DeSantis has demonstrated a ton of strength at the political performance of it. He's good at like yelling at a reporter at a press conference when you can't hear the reporter. It's just a one way thing. Like Chris Christie was, he's good at that, but he hasn't demonstrated that he's like that charismatic when standing next to Trump on stage is a very different animal than that. So I think there are a lot of potential pitfalls.
It's going to be interesting too, because in a lot of ways, Ron DeSantis' political identity is predicated on his fealty to Donald Trump, or his kind of emergence out of the Trumpism of it all. And so for him to have to kind of go against that, to like completely separate himself and then turn on Trump is, it's not sure like whether he's actually going to be capable of even
And Trump will use that. You can already see it. Trump's already saying that kind of stuff. You know, Trump's going to try to turn him into kind of like pat him on the head, his little mini me, and say nice, good luck maybe next time, little guy. And the question I think comes to whether like that alpha Trump thing is enough anymore, right? Or whether there's a critical mass of Republican voters that get convinced by the DeSantis argument, which will be basically, I'm giving you all the stuff you like about Trump, but without some of the baggage, without some of the political baggage.
Yeah.
Can that argument win? In the vacuum, it sounds like a good argument. Will it be a winning argument when Trump is out there talking about all the reasons why it's bad and making fun of him and mocking him and making him seem like a little bitch?
Yeah. I guess it's never too early for some bad takes. So okay, with that said, what do you think is going to happen as we head into 2024? Who do you think the general election candidates or nominees rather are going to be?
Boy, it is really early for this.
Never too early is for some bad takes.
I'm really bad at predictions. So I thought it was going to be Kamala in 20, on the Democratic side last time. I thought it was going to be Rubio. So don't fucking listen to me. I guess what I'm going to say. Look, 6 months ago, I would have said, I don't think Biden can run, and I think it'll be an open field, it'd be anybody's guess. I think Kamala, again, I would have maybe ran with Kamala, despite seeing her challenges. Now I think it's pretty clear Biden wants to run. It's going to be tough to argue against that. He has a great record, and the midterms went well. Like, what is the record? What is the argument against him running if he wants to? So I think it will be Biden. And right now, I think that Trump is a slight favorite over DeSantis, a slight favorite. But I think that we really have a lot more information on this come summer. Right. I will be much better telling you who won't be.
Yeah.
Like Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, all the like somebody's a moderate. That's not what the Republican voters want.
They want a fighter.
It'll be DeSantis, Trump, or some other kind of MAGA outsider.
It's hard to see it not being Mike Pompeo. I mean, the guy's so popular that you saw that blurb
he made of himself
in his own book. Like this book reads like a stunning, compelling read.
Chutzpah.
And it was so fun writing it. Mike Pompeo.
Pompeo's going to be speaking to a lot of like half-empty pizza ranches in Iowa. And he's gotten skinny. He's president in his own eyes.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to land for him.
Okay. So more broadly, in terms of what's happening right now, do you think that we're going to see anything substantive from this Republican-led House, or are we going to be relegated to 2 years of what I think is obviously the most important political issue facing us right now, the most important national security issue facing us right now, which is what you called the issue of Hunter Biden's hog?
Have you looked at Hunter Biden's hog?
I haven't seen it, but all these conservatives are doing their level best at trying to make sure that it gets back onto our timelines.
Well... It's, you know, it's something to look at. I'll tell you that. Hunter, they are the number one issue for Republicans is making sure that all the social media networks are forced to put Hunter Biden's hog onto the timeline. That's it. That's their top issue. They're going to investigate Hunter. They're going to investigate the naked pictures. They're going to investigate the his business dealings and, you know, find any evidence they can that Biden is involved with that at all, the President Biden. And I think that will be their top priority. And then I think there'll be other investigations, the new classified doc issue to muddy the waters with Trump. Obviously, there are differences, but the Republican House will do that investigation. I think that there'll be investigations and maybe some impeachments at Alejandro Mayorkas. And then the only substantive thing that they're going to do is this economic brinksmanship over the debt ceiling. In order to force cuts, and I think secondary motivation is forcing economic troubles in the hopes that that helps Republicans in the long term. If the economy is weak, that's good for the out party. But if you define caring about substance as, oh, Kevin McCarthy and Chuck Schumer and Biden are going to get together to try to figure out a way to solve the asylum issue or help fix the tax code or come to a deal on, climate. They don't fucking want to do any of that, and they won't do any of it.
Well, like, you were immersed in this world up until just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Is that actually helpful for the right? I mean, does the right want to see legislative solutions, or do they want the dysfunction because the dysfunction then shows that government isn't the solution, it's the problem, and so in turn you have to get smaller government, and at the end of the day that's what these people want. They want no government at all. So in a way, are there Republicans out there rooting for the whole building to burn down, or is there some degree of like, look, in this last Congress we were able to get the ability for the government to negotiate lower drug prices. We were able to get health care for veterans. We were able to get the CHIPS Act and the, hundreds of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in investments that came with it, and on and on and on.
Yeah, I think you hit on it. It's a bottom-up issue, right? Thomas Massie is a libertarian congressman from Kentucky. He had this classic quote, which said, before 2016, we all thought that Republican voters wanted the most conservative policies. It turns out what they wanted was the craziest son of a bitch in the race. Yeah. And that's right. Republican voters, particularly for federal offices, we have a focus group podcast where we talk to MAGA voters, and it's a little bit different for like governor's races. Like voters do want specific things from their governor, but from senators and the president, what they want is the performative, nihilistic, lib-owning, burn everything down. That's what the voters want, right? And so if you go to cut a deal, you get punished. I mean, just look at John Boehner and Paul Ryan. Kevin McCarthy has learned from the failures of his predecessors, right? The Republicans have gotten punished time and again by their own voters, not by the electorate at large, but by their own voters in primaries, if they are too willing to kind of negotiate and solve. If you try to solve a problem, well, then that opens you up to a lot of criticism, right? Yeah. If all you do is say, I'm against this, I'm against that, I want to tear that down, well, then you don't have any accountability or responsibility for anything, right?
Yeah.
So I do think that that is what is driving this. I think that there are still a handful of Republicans in Washington that would love to like achieve maybe not the policy objectives that you agree with, but like, that have genuine beliefs about regulatory reform or whatever. But they've learned that that just gets them in trouble with voters. And the best thing to do is like dunk on the lips.
Yeah. Tim, where can we see and hear more from you?
We've got a show on Snapchat called Not My Party. We have a podcast at The Bulwark every day, The Bulwark Podcast. We do a once a week Next Level podcast at The Bulwark. I'm on MSNBC from time to time, flapping my jaw. I'm on Twitter still, even though Elon's trying to ruin it. Doing my tweets. And so, I'm a multi-platform content man.
Well, make sure to follow Tim. Thank you so much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's so good we got to do this in person. This is awesome.
Thanks again to Tim. That's it for this episode. Talk to you next week. You've been listening to No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen, produced by Sam Graber, music by Wellesley, interviews captured and edited for YouTube and Facebook by Nicholas Nicotera, and recorded in Los Angeles, California. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on your preferred podcast app, feel free to leave a 5-star rating and a review, and check out briantylercohen.com for links to all of my other channels.